December 31st, 2009 was a blue moon, according to the definition of a blue moon being the second full moon in a calendar month. This definition, however, comes from a 1946 Sky and Telescope magazine misinterpretation of the 1937 Maine Farmer's Almanac. The actual Farmer's Almanac definition is an extra full moon in a season. Normally there are three, and if there are four, the third one is a blue one. That shoots down the recent one. The next almanac blue moon is November 21st, 2010. I'm looking into the seasons and what's behind them on My Two Cents this week, and unlike blue moons, this stuff is non-negotiable. It's not a popularity contest, but if I make any mistakes, you know where to... No, actually, let me know by email at kloijohn@gmail.com. Except in places like the equator, life on Earth is pretty seasonal. But where do winter, summer, spring, and fall come from? And what exactly is a solstice? Something to do with the Earth's tilt, right? Einstein came up with weird theories by doing thought experiments, like traveling in a spaceship near the speed of light. My thought experiment is a lot more down to Earth. Imagine a room with a lamp in the center with a naked bulb. You've got a globe and perhaps a small table to set it on. Set the globe on the table. Turn out all the lights except the lamp. The side of the globe toward the lamp is day, of course, and the other side is night. If it's a proper globe, it's sitting on the table at a tilt of 23.5 degrees. But tilted relative to what? The Earth doesn't ever go up toward the ceiling or down to the floor. The surface of the table represents the quote-unquote plane of the Earth's orbit around the Sun, and that's what the tilt is relative to. Now, look down on the north pole of the globe and spin it a bit. Spin it counterclockwise, in other words, from west to east. This is the direction most things in the solar system turn, counterclockwise, when viewed from north. Earth spins on its axis that way, and all the planets and asteroids go around the Sun counterclockwise, too. And all the planets except two spin on their axes that same way. The reason for this consistency is almost certainly that the solar system formed by condensing out of a single gravitationally shrinking cloud that began rotating like a skater pulling in her arms. Dumb luck it wasn't clockwise. Back to the thought experiment. Let's start with our winter, which means point the tilted north pole of the globe away from the lamp. Put a piece of blue painter's tape right on Lopez Island. Let's put on Antonio Vivaldi's The Four Seasons for some mood music. Let's start with winter, Allegro. This is Seiji Ozawa and the Boston Symphony Orchestra. As the globe turns west to east, Lopez comes from night into day. Since a tiny Lopezian would have to look eastward to see the emerging lamp, the sun rises in the east. You can see, with this arrangement, Lopez spends more time in night than in day. Let's stick a pin in to represent our tiny Lopezian. It will point directly out from the globe's surface, since the pull of gravity is toward Earth's center. Turn the globe so the pin is in the middle of the sunny side, noon. So if the fellow looks directly up at noon, along the pin, the sun is not there, overhead. Even if you tilted the globe 23.5 degrees so it's upright on the table, the sun is still not overhead for Lopez. To get it overhead from there, you'd have to tilt it further by the amount of our latitude, which is about 48.5 degrees. Add these together to get 72 degrees. That's how far off the sun is from 90 degrees overhead. Subtract from 90 for the altitude above the horizon. So, at the point where the pole is tilted as far away from the sun as it ever gets, the winter solstice, the sun in the Lopez sky at noon is only 18 degrees above the horizon, about the angle of a good wedge of Swiss cheese. The winter solstice happens on either December 21st or 22nd, depending on how our imperfect calendar slides relative to the heavenly spheres. What is a solstice? Comes from sol for sun and stis for, well, probably comes from some Latin or Greek word for standing still. The solstice is the moment when the sun stands still, not in its daily path, of course, but in its seasonal rise and fall above the horizon. In our thought experiment, the sun is 18 degrees above the horizon at Lopez. Before that, it was higher in the sky. After that, it gets higher in the sky again. So for a moment, colloquially expanded to a whole day, the sun seems to pause at its lowest point, the solstice. Now let's move the globe in a counterclockwise circle around the lamp to a point 90 degrees from where we started. Oops, one more thing. Put a gold star sticker on the ceiling where the Earth's axis was pointing to begin with. The axis is the imaginary line through the north and south poles. Extended into space, it points close to the North Star. When orbiting the globe around the sun, we've got to keep the axis pointing to the gold star on the ceiling, approximately anyway. It's not too exact, since the real North Star, Polaris, is about 430 light years away, and our ceiling is, well, closer. Ah, spring peepers. Now a quarter of the way around the room, we're entering spring. Turn the globe and watch the Lopesian. With some margin of error due to our limited analogy here, the Lopesian spends the same amount of time in light and darkness, and everywhere on the Earth is in the same situation. This is the equinox, equal day and night. Why only nox or night? The complaints department closed circa 1391. What do you want? It was the Dark Ages. How high is the Lopesian sun at noon now? Since the axis tilt is at right angles to the sun-Earth line, the tilt doesn't count anymore. The globe will have to be tilted exactly the number of degrees of our latitude to bring the Lopez pin so it points toward the sun. In other words, the sun is off from overhead by our latitude of 48.5 degrees, which means it's 90 minus that, or 41.5 degrees above the horizon. Notice that at the equator, at the equinox, the sun is now directly overhead. Play around with the globe a bit, and you'll see that the only places on Earth where the sun is ever directly overhead are between the lines of 23.5 north latitude and 23.5 south latitude, the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn, respectively. Moving another 90 degrees counterclockwise around the room, keeping the axis pointed to our phony Polaris, we now find the daytime northern hemisphere tipped directly toward the lamp. This must be summer, at least for us. I once flew from New York in summer to Melbourne, Australia, which was in winter. The time of sunset was about 9:30 p.m. when I left, but around 4:30 p.m. when I arrived. I'd lost 5 hours of daylight every day, and Melbourne isn't the liveliest night city in the world. To get the sun at zenith, or overhead, for the Lopez pinhead, since it's now overhead on the Tropic of Cancer at 23.5 degrees north, we have to continue to tilt by the difference between 23.5 and our latitude of 48.5, or 25 degrees. This measure is how far off the sun is from zenith at noon on Lopez at the summer equinox. To get the elevation from the horizon, subtract from 90 degrees to get 65 degrees. Notice that a northern part of the Earth is now never in shadow as you rotate the globe. These are places above the Arctic Circle, the latitude line that's 23.5 degrees south of the North Pole, approximate latitude 66.5 north, land of the midnight sun. The exact latitude of the Arctic Circle varies with the polar precession cycle of about 26,000 years. This Earth feature, like the wobble of a gyroscope, is often called the precession of the equinoxes, since it also shifts the geometric point in the orbit when equinox occurs. Detection of this shift was credited until recently to Hipparchus at more than 100 years BC. It was observed by the slight changing of the rising time of fixed background stars. The shift is about 1 degree every 76 years. Those old farts had too much time on their hands. More recently, it's been thought that precession may have been detected as long ago as 6,000 years. There's a theory that new pyramids were realigned every 400 years or so to compensate for precession. Well, I guess eyeballs haven't changed that much from the Egyptians to Hipparchus, so why not? Precession also affects what constellations the sun is in at the vernal equinox, which defines astrological ages. Way back when, we were in the age of Aries the Ram, but precession has moved the sun into Pisces. As they say in the song, it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius as the sun shifts into that constellation. According to Wikipedia, the astrological sign, Aquarius, is associated with electricity, computers, flight, democracy, freedom, humanitarianism, idealists, modernization, rebels and rebellion, mental diseases, nervous disorders, nonconformity, philanthropy, veracity, perseverance, mankind, and irresolution. So hey, we must be close. Depending on who you ask, the age of Aquarius can begin any time from 1497 to 3597 AD. The book The Orion Mystery uses precession to calculate a date of 2070, based on the theory that the Egyptians were trying to send the spirits of the pharaohs to the constellation Orion. In 2080, Aquarius's ruling planet will enter that constellation. Sounds like a good date to me. So what happened to fall? Ran out of time, fell through the cracks. Same as spring in reverse. And that's my two cents. I'm John Waugh. See ya on the airwaves 10:01 p.m. Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Sunday, and 9:45 a.m. Tuesday.